It's time to unleash your inner cowboy with the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Now here's your host, Alyssa Barnes.
Hello and welcome to episode number 25 of the Earn Your Spurs podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Barnes. I hope you're enjoying winter wherever you are. I obviously am in Montana, but we've had a pretty unseasonably warm January. So aside from the ice that makes it rather treacherous to walk across my driveway, it's been pretty sunshiny and not too cold at all. So I really can't complain. That probably means that winter is coming next month, but I'll take the sunshine as long as I can get it. So I'm really excited to introduce you to today's guest. And I think a lot of you are going to find this particular interview helpful, especially if you have any interest in getting into rodeo yourself. Lyle Sankey, and the Sankey name in general, is definitely no stranger to rodeo. Lyle actually made it to the NFR in all three rough stock events, bareback, saddle bronc, and bull riding. And now he makes his living putting on schools, teaching other people how to do the same thing. He puts on about 20 schools a year all across the country in saddle bronc, bareback riding, bull riding, and also bullfighting. So chances are good that if you have any interest in getting into rough stock, there may be a school that's not too far away from you. He also has a thing called the Vision Quest Adventure, which is really interesting. And it allows people who have no desire to go on and really compete in rodeo to still have the experience. Without further ado, allow me to introduce you to Lyle Sankey.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Great. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So I really want to talk about the Sankey Rodeo Schools because I think the audience is going to be super interested to hear about that. But first of all, if you could kind of just give us your background and talk a little bit about how you got involved in rodeo and how you ended up, you know, starting to put on these schools, that would be great.
Okay. Well, and my history maybe is a little different than a lot of people. I was going to little horse show play days and had no exposure to rodeo, no background. I don't even remember that I'd ever even seen a rodeo.
Wow.
They paid the entry fees for the High Point guy and girl at a local Little Britches rodeo. That was the association. It was like 18 and under, and they had a couple age groups. And it was in Wichita, Kansas at the time. And I did horrible. And, you know, I just figured, well, let's find out what it takes to do this. And I got hooked really quick, and that took me into my career. And my younger brother started at the same time. Since I was going to that rodeo, he entered a couple of events and did really well. We were both in the standings in professional rodeo and get some headlines because it was a brother team that always does. And so some local guys around the Wichita area there, Rose Hill, Kansas is where we were. And my dad still has an arena there and property there. But they started asking us to do a school, and I hadn't thought too much about it, but we did a little short two-day thing, and it was successful, so we kind of expanded from there. My brother's real interested in the production of it, the raising livestock and doing that, but didn't like the school so much, so he went one direction, and as I was still competing, I was starting to develop rodeo schools and gradually moved into it as I was exiting from full-time competition. And it's been really great. We get to work with a lot of different people. And then, of course, the schools have changed dramatically from the early 80s to today. It's a whole different clientele now.
I bet. And I would love to hear more about that. But did you start doing the schools when you were still really involved in rodeoing full-time yourself then?
I did. You know, most of the time when you have guys doing rodeo school, it's back, at least when I got started, it was because it was either the off-season and they needed money, which the off-season is pretty short in pro rodeo, but, you know, there's a few dates that used to be open. And if they were hurt, then they'd schedule some rodeo schools, try to make a little money. And, you know, our deal evolved to where it was more focused and we provided equipment for the students. Nobody else has ever done that. Mm. We're really the only one that's ever done it full-time.
And when you were rodeoing yourself, you competed in all three Rustock events?
I did, yeah. That's the big PR package, that I was the third one to ever qualify for the National Finals Rodeo in all three of the Rustock events, Ty Murray, of course, being the last.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was fun. And then I won the bull riding twice, so that's the other marketing thing that we use.
Yeah, well, you're obviously qualified, I would say. So once you kind of started transitioning out of rodeoing full-time, you really got into doing putting on these schools full-time. Did you kind of start out doing it around where you live, or have you always got, you know, kind of traveled all over the country, or how did that work?
Well, the first ones were there in Rose Hill, Kansas. And
okay.
I confined them to there for a while. My brother and my dad were developing a rodeo company that they shared a pro rodeo stock contractor's card for a few years, and then that split off, and my brother wanted to do the pro rodeo. My dad was doing a little local bull riding thing, and they kind of went different directions with that, and I wanted to rodeo full-time, so my interest in the livestock didn't last but a couple of years there, and I sold my share to them, and they split that up, and we had some nice bulls that went for the National Finals Rodeo and to other stock contractors around the country. But that's where the school started, there in Rose Hill. And then we start getting requests from people to do them in their area. And so as I started looking at that, we gradually started doing that. And it really started off with people that were families of former students that wanted to bring something there to the area where they lived. And so that's how I started branching out.
Hmm. So now how many schools do you put on a year now?
Well, right now we're only doing around 20 schools a year. We were doing as many as 35 schools a year 10 years ago.
Wow. And has that decrease come from just a decrease in interest, or are you just not wanting to travel as much, or
well,
what's brought that on?
No, it's a couple things. There's more interest in the sport than ever, but the economy is really tough for a lot of people. We did a school in Kansas back in the early 80s, and we had students flying in from all over. We had 16 different states represented and four different foreign countries. Well, with the cost of airline tickets now, that's just not feasible for people to do it. You know, motel costs, meals, everything is up, but especially travel expenses. So that's affected a lot. And, you know, the demographics are just different. There's not as many kids that grow up in the country. They don't have to have rodeo background, but they need to be at least a little bit more rugged. And just not as many kids that think it's cool to get rolled around the dirt and jump up and do it again. You know, and it's the same thing I see. I went to a high school football game, and my wife is a photographer for the Booster Club. So at halftime, I asked her why they weren't suiting up all the JV and the freshmen. And I hadn't been for a few years, and she said, they are all suited up. They're less than half of what there were in the early 80s. And, you know, so it's the same kind of mentality, just not as many rough and tumble folks out there, I guess. But a lot of what makes up our schools today that keeps it going, so that the rodeo people have an opportunity to get the training, is the adventure people. And we have everything. We've had guys in their mid and upper 70s come to just do it for a one-time experience. I had a guy bring his 61-year-old wife for an anniversary present. Now, he wasn't getting on, but he brought her to bull riding class for an adventure experience. And she had time of her life. She just got on one bull, and we handpicked it, of course. It was something that was pretty predictable and pretty safe for her to get on. So some great stories like that, but we have all kinds of adventure people now that do the parachuting and rock climbing and whitewater rafting and, you know, mountain climbing, all kinds of stuff, and come and do the bull riding. And it's really cool because they leave going, wow, nothing gives you the adrenaline rush like that. So it's a little more than just the rodeo interested people nowadays. It's kind of split between those two.
Yeah, and that is really interesting to me because, you know, with my podcast and with my blog and everything, I'm really trying to reach out to people who don't have that rural background and maybe didn't grow up on a ranch, but they have the interest. And and you are really appealing to that audience with the vision, quest, adventure, and I just think that's really neat. Have you had any people that have done that that have actually gone on and gotten more into it?
Oh, yeah. We've had students that have far exceeded my income earning. We've had world champions in virtually every event. And just so much success, from youth rodeos to college rodeo to professional rodeo. A former student of mine who had a great career himself competing just won the national championship team in college rodeo. And the big deal there is it's the first team east of Mississippi to ever do that. So
wow.
He's Tennessee and a great coach and had won all kinds of awards before in his regions, both when he was in Kansas as well as being over there in Tennessee. But this national victory was a big, big deal. So, you know, we take a lot of pleasure in that we have former students that are successful. And most of the guys on my rodeo school staff were at one time students themselves. So that's really fun that they come back and want to share with others what their experiences have been and help those young guys go on and have the same opportunities.
Yeah, and they obviously know what it feels like to be at the school as a student too, so they can kind of relate.
Absolutely.
So do you find that in all the years that you've been putting these schools on, are you finding now that you've got more urban people participating and less of the rural folks?
Well, there's probably more, yes, but there's always been a lot of those. You know, there's a tremendous amount of rodeo cowboys who aren't rural backgrounds. One of the funny stories at the National Finals Rodeo this year is one of the bull riders had to take horseback riding lessons so he could do what they call the grand entry, where they have everybody ride out in the arena, because he's
right.
Never been on a horse before.
That's great. I love that. I remember talking to a bronc rider several years ago. I think it was Cody Martin, who told me the same thing, that he started riding broncs when he was in high school, but he'd never ridden a saddle horse. So the victory lap was the scariest part for him.
Cody Martin is a former student, by the way, which is kind of fun. We're really proud. He won a national title in college and then has competed at the national finals several times. So small world that you've already talked to Cody.
Yeah, I mean, this was years ago when I talked to him. I thought he'd be really fun to have on because he has an interesting background of how he got into rodeo in the first place. And I always like to kind of seek those guys out because I think it's interesting to hear from people that don't come from that background that still have a lot of success in rodeo.
Well, we have a lot of those. We had a surgeon come to our rodeo school in Florida from the big city. He's always lived with concrete all around him. In fact, he'd never seen a live animal until he was an adult.
Oh my gosh.
House pets. He said he'd never even seen a chicken until he was an adult. That was the first actual live animal he'd ever seen. So
wow.
He did that with some of his doctor buddies. They had a little different income, obviously, because they had a bet that they'd pay his tuition and give him $500 if he got on a bull at the school. And that's what he did. He went through the first day's training, got on one animal, and that was it. He won the bet, and he was happy. He got the video and some pictures and went home.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's huge, especially in, you know, today's world of social media and everyone's posting videos and pictures online, to be able to show that you rode a bull to all your friends. Those are some bragging rights.
Oh, absolutely. We have a professional photographer on site, so he edits the videos that we use for training video, puts some fun music to them, and those people get a chance to have those videos to hand out and show to friends, and then they do pictures and they can do it for promotion or marketing or all kinds of stuff. So makes it really fun.
Yeah. So what are some of the first things that you teach to your students when they come to a school?
Well, we are pretty direct with everything. You know, we make them aware that there is a risk, a measured risk involved. And so the first part of dealing with it is to recognize it. And we talk about how you deal with it. You know, you deal with it through quality information, through use of quality equipment, and But actually, we boil it down to one word: trust. You got to trust the information you're getting. You got to trust the equipment that you're using. We take care of the equipment before we ever go to actual livestock. Make sure that they have good gear, whether it's theirs or stuff we're loaning them. And then the last thing that they have to trust, of course, is themselves. And if they're doing those things, then they're ready to get on. And we use different training machines, different training drills that we do to get all the fundamentals. Just like a tennis player would hit against the backboard, or football players, you know, would run routes or hit blocking dummies, things like that. So we do all of the very same things.
Mm-hmm. Do you have, I mean, obviously you've got some connections as far as when it comes to finding stock to put on your schools, but do you ever have a challenge kind of finding those horses and bulls that are really, really work for beginners that are, you know, kind of easier to ride?
Well, absolutely. One of the things that's different with our program than many of the others, and it cost me doing some schools, but we have people all the time that want to do schools, and the reason they want to do it is they want to try out green horses or bulls, and that's never been something I felt too good about, charging young people to come and test pilot somebody else's green stock. So, you know, it irritates those guys, because we won't do it, use our kids for guinea pigs, but there's plenty of schools out there that do it that way. But it's difficult.
Yeah.
When you're getting on stuff that you can't handle, it, buck and shoot and stuff that's just crazy, never seen people, and it's too rank. Many of them are out of breeding programs, both horses and bulls. So even those young ones are just too far ahead of what a young novice or certainly a beginner would be. So we just don't do those. So yeah, it's a challenge. And, it really has to be people that believe in the sport and believe we need to groom new athletes, because there's not enough money for the stock contractors to make it worthwhile to do it. You know, if they happen to hurt one animal, you know, an accident, an injured one, they'd lose money on the rodeo school. So, you know, we've got a great network of people that believe in what we're doing. They've seen the product. They've seen, you know, good athletes come out of there that are responsible and do a good job at the rodeo. So it makes their business better. And so that's why they do the schools with us. But you're right, it's very difficult to find the right kind of livestock to do a school with, at least the way that we want to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that from your standpoint, you want to know what you're putting out there for these kids mostly to get on. You know, you want to have some confidence in knowing what kind of a trip they're going to have when they come out, so that these beginners can kind of start to build their confidence a little bit.
Well, when I went to my first schools, what they ran in there was a mix of sale barn animals and stuff that had just been to the National Finals Rodeo. They still had the stickers on them from the National
Finals. Oh, my gosh.
About the top 100 animals in the world. And nobody assigned livestock. So if you weren't pretty savvy, you were just getting on whatever ran in. And there were some interesting wrecks that happened at those schools.
I bet. Gosh, I'm glad things have changed in that department.
Well, they have with our program. They're not much different with a lot of others, unfortunately. The only difference is they don't buck national final stuff anymore at those other schools. They just buck all green stuff. There's several really, really good breeding programs, but it's extremely difficult because of the decreased number of rodeo athletes. It's really difficult to find people to get on that livestock. So, you know, that's why the schools, some of them put on free rodeo schools, and it looks really great on paper. Guys go, man, I can go, this looks free. And there's not a lot of instruction. They just go get on green stuff, and then it's a big party at night. And our program's just different. It really is a training program, and we want to respect the time and investment that our students make. And it's paid off. Like Cody Martin, you know, we've got a lot of successful athletes out there.
Yeah, and you don't want to get somebody hurt that just starting out, and, you know, not give them a chance to get their feet wet and build some confidence and feel like they've actually accomplished something their first time getting on.
Well, and, you know, worse than even the injuries, in my opinion, is the fact that you can just crush somebody so quick and they just quit. They just go home because it's not fun. They didn't have a chance. They couldn't learn anything, get slammed every time when the gate opened. So they just quit. And
right.
For athletes we won't have in the sport in the future. So that's why our program's targeted a bit different.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that because I think it's important to keep growing the sport, and you know, it's people like you that are going to ensure that that happens. So, thank you for caring.
Because what we did feels like God's blessed us with that opportunity, so we're going to honor it and continue to do what we do, and we'll have the students that we're supposed to have at those schools, and they'll have a great experience.
So now, when you put on a school, I know you do bronc riding, bareback riding, bull riding, and then also bullfighting. Is that right?
Correct, yeah, and it's the U.S. rodeo-style bullfighting. There's some confusion once in a while with people about that, but yeah, it's the U.S. rodeo-style.
Okay, and when you do a school, do you do a bull riding school here and then a bronc riding school here, or do you have a couple days of bull riding and a couple days of bronc riding, or how does that work?
That's a great question. I guess there is some confusion on that. They're all three there going on at the same time, but while one group is watching videotapes, another group is doing training drills on mechanicals or the stationary drills or drills on a gentle saddle horse, and the other group's in the arena actually getting on livestock. And then the only part that really overlaps is our orientation and then our classroom sessions at night, because people can learn so much from even the other events and questions that are asked about business, travel, rehabilitation and training, that kind of stuff. But yeah, they're all three going on the same facility, just in different areas of the facility.
Okay. So if somebody wanted to go to a bronc riding school and a bull riding school, they'd have to go to two separate ones because there wouldn't be a chance to go to attend the same training at one school.
Yeah, we have people ask that all the time, but what I tell them is if you have a ton of experience in both events, and you're just tuning up, like maybe you've been injured and you're just coming back and want to get on a few before you go enter, then you can do multiple events. But otherwise, it's real frustrating. And every person that's done it with me has said, you were right, I'll come back in just one event next time. So
yeah,
the thing is, you can't be in two places at once. And so somebody trying to do two or three events is like doing a golf clinic, a football camp, and, you know, a baseball camp all going on at once. You're trying to run back and forth from one field to the next, and whenever you're at one, you're missing something in the other one.
Right. Now, do you have people actually host these schools for you? Do they say, you know, Lyle, can you come put on a school in my area, or how does that work?
Absolutely, yeah. If people want to produce one, we have a contract that we do with them where they produce it as a business venture, and they have an opportunity to, you know, for it to be a positive business experience on their end. And they put together the livestock, the training facilities for us. What I do is I bring in the coaching staff and all of the equipment and the school program, basically. But they provide the facilities and the livestock. So we have a lot of those. About a third of the schools that we do are that way. And again, all of those are with people that are former students.
Mm-hmm.
Families of former students.
And then the other schools that you do, you just produce the whole thing yourself.
Right. We lease the facilities and the livestock, and I'm the producer as well as the coordinator for the school.
Okay. And do you have schools kind of in representing most of the regions of the country, or is there some where you do several and others where you don't do too much at all?
Well, up until a few years ago, we were pretty much coast to coast and north to south. But again, just because of the economy, you know, we're not doing our North Dakota school. We dropped the Homestead, Florida school a few years ago. We didn't. They actually were just busy with some other things. And they're about bringing that back now. Homestead is as far south as you can go and build as the southernmost rodeo in the United States. We also did schools a couple hours from the East Coast, and then we did schools in California and Nevada. And those East and West Coast schools we dropped, partially in the West Coast because of the economy. You know, when fuel was $2 here, it was $5 out there. And everything was struck in, the livestock, the hay, and the facilities were primo facilities. So they were mega expensive, and they were just too expensive for our producers to continue with it. And we filled every school up, but there's only so many hours in the day. So, you know, there's a point you have to limit it to honor the people that are there. And with the economy continuing to get tougher, They just chose to put those on hold for a while. So, you know, I still keep in touch with those people. Most of them are, again, former students and good friends, and we still keep in touch. But other than that, we have them pretty spread out. You know, we do Florida, some North Florida, Somerville, Georgia, well, actually Central Florida. We do one in Georgia. We do a couple in the Houston, Texas area. We've got schools in Iowa and Missouri and Kansas, Wyoming. So, you know, it's still pretty spread out over the central part of the state.
Yeah, so there's probably a good chance that there's one at least somewhat near you.
Well, at least within travel distance, we hope.
Right. So what do you tell students that want to come to your school for the first time about how to prepare and how to get ready so that they get the most out of the school when they get there?
Well, we tell them the most important thing is to be as physically prepared as possible. That's the biggest thing, because if you're prepared physically, then you're a lot tougher mentally. And make no mistake about it, there's a lot of physical aspect to the rodeo thing. And it doesn't take long for it to happen, but it happens really quick, and it can be pretty explosive. So the better shape you're in, the more you get out of it.
Yeah, well, that makes sense for sure. I mean, it takes a lot of strength to ride an animal that weighs that much and has that much strength. What do you tell your students after they've come to a school and they're going to go home and they want to keep going? I mean, is there an opportunity for most people to kind of find a place to practice where they live? Or, you know, is that just limited to certain areas? I mean, how does someone kind of keep going after they've had that initial education?
That's a real common question that we get. It varies from region to region. First of all, every student leaves the school with drills that they can do every single day at home, even if they just have, you know, a backyard or a garage, and they can put a spur board or barrel out there. We show them things that have been used for years by professional athletes that they can continue to do to stay mentally sharp and to work on the fundamentals that are essential for success in the sport. For the bull riding, there are a lot of practice pens, a lot of small local events around that guys can go to. For bareback and saddle bronc, that's a little bit tougher. Mostly, you know, they can't afford to risk good pickup horses or pay high-quality pickup men to come to the practice pens, and those are pretty essential elements when you get on bucking horses, good pickup men with good horses under them. So you usually get some locals that just kind of want to be there, and quite often what you're getting on is some tryout horses. So the horse deal's a little tough. Usually for guys that are serious about that, they're going to just come back to additional schools. And then we point them to, depending on the athlete and what their goals are, there's a lot of local events, everything from youth rodeo all the way up through pro rodeo. So they have a lot of options available to them where they can go and get some experience. And, you know, if you plug in while you're with us at the school, you'll definitely be able to handle yourself responsibly when you go to those smaller events. And like everything, you know, you don't go to a golf school and you're ready to take on the PGA after one weekend. But the sooner you get out there and start playing, the sooner you deal with the emotions and the pressure and all of that. So we encourage them to get involved some way when they leave. And everyone's goals are different, too.
Right. And how much can they sort of keep themselves in shape and mentally prepared to go get on an animal just by doing drills at home?
Well, if a person is able to focus, they should be able to stay really alert and aware. I have a friend that competed his whole career in bull riding, decided to open his own law practice instead of working for a big firm. So when he did that, he was going to be limited. You know, he hoped he could get to 10 rodeos a year. He didn't get to that many. But he had a spur board, he had a bucking machine in his garage, he had a weight bench and a mountain bike. And he stayed physically fit and mentally sharp. And when he got to those rodeos, it was fun watching him get on because he came to compete. It was just a handful of events a year. And it was in a brand new event that he hadn't done his whole life. He started it when most guys are retiring. and yet still intended to be competitive. So, you know, everybody's different. Some guys never really get a handle on the mental disciplines, but that's the same in any sport. You know, some guys are much better at it, and that's definitely a big part of the sport, is how well you control your focus and your mental imagery, your visualization, and the training drills are only as good as you're able to put yourself in the moment like it's a real horse or bull. If you're just getting on like it's a toy or a training drill, it doesn't do you near as much good. So sometimes it can actually be counterproductive because you're not getting on with any emotion. And when you do that, then you get to real livestock, the emotion overwhelms you, and all you have is adrenaline, but your mind can't keep up with it because you didn't practice that way. So that's as much of a learned skill as the actual riding skills themselves.
Do you cover that quite a bit at your schools, the mental aspect of it?
Absolutely. From start to finish, we continue to talk about it, continue to push guys to work really hard at that. Students sometimes and have them climb off the bucket machine, the training drills, and they go, "What, was I not doing it right?" And they go, "Yes, you're doing it mechanically right, but you're not involved mentally or emotionally. You're just going through the motions. It's not going to help you when you get on bucket stock, so you're wasting your time and everybody else's." So somebody get on that's really deliberate about what they're doing. And then when they get back on, they're a little more focused. Irritated maybe, but focused. And a lot of people at the end of school go, "Man, it really irritated me, but you were right. I got it."
Yeah. Well, I, having competed in rodeo myself, I know how important that mental aspect is, and not letting your emotions take over. And a lot of people struggle with fighting their head in the arena. So that's really important to be able to harness that.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a lifelong challenge to continue to do that. So it never stops. The school, we tell people, you're not doing anything here that's complete or exhaustive. And that's why we've had guys come back to 10, 12 schools. And, you know, they come back every year to tune up. And so we started a deal a few years ago after they're full paid at 3 schools, that they never pay anything but just maintenance costs. You know, we got to pay our stock contractor and the basics, and that's all they ever have to pay if they want to come back every year, because we want to be a part of their success.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, very cool. If people want to find out more about you and your schools, where can they go online to do that?
It's really simple. It's just our name, SankeyRodeo.com. That's SankeyRodeo. S as in Sierra, SankeyRodeo, and then rodeo, RODEO.com. They can Google it for rodeo schools or bull riding schools or whatever, and they'll find it pretty quick.
Awesome. And you also sell equipment on your website as well, right?
We do. That's one of the things I enjoy least. Rodeo equipment's not a real good business for a profit margin. And the stuff you buy normally in Western stores is not real high-end stuff. It's economy built with a high profit margin. And any of the quality handmade stuff never has that benefit. So obviously Western stores cannot afford to keep it. I mean, they couldn't stay in business. So we carry, you know, quality gear, and it's not a real good margin. And we give our students discount prices on stuff. So, you know, it's all about serving our clients. If I wasn't doing rodeo schools, I wouldn't stay in the equipment business very long.
Yeah.
You have it. We're proud of what we have. We have 100% satisfaction guaranteed. I remember what it was like buying gear. You need help, but sometimes nobody's helping you. And we want to provide that to people getting started, help them make good decisions. I had a guy just order a bull rope a week ago, and he's a former student, but he never ordered a custom rope. And, man, it was not going to be good. So I called him. And we talked to her. I said, "I can order just what you order, but I want to make sure this is what you want." And he said, "Well, what are you concerned with?" But as we talked through it, he said, "Man, I just didn't know." He said, "I appreciate so much calling." He said, "Let's make the changes you suggested, and he'll be happy with it." And this way, if he got it and decided it was a little bit too big or small and he wanted to change a little, it's still in the line of responsible ropes that we take it back in, and we can use it at the schools or you know, somebody else will want it, either one. And we have an advantage there that most people doing custom equipment don't have. So, yeah, it's just one more service we could provide, and we're proud to be able to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's really helpful for people who are just getting started and they have no clue what they need.
Oh, absolutely. It's like speaking a whole different language.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I'm so glad that you could come on the show today and talk about your schools. I think this is going to be really hugely helpful to people who are interested in getting started in rodeo and just don't have a clue where to even go to look for information. I just have one final question for you before we wrap up, and I always ask this to every guest that I have on the show, and that is, what do you think is the most important quality for any good cowboy to have?
Passion about what they do. I think sports are just like life. When you find something you're passionate about, you'll do well with it. If it's just something you're doing because it looked cool, you won't make it very long in rodeo. You have to have a passion that drives you through the tough times so you get to where you can enjoy the good Saturday night moments.
Yeah. Well, that's very true, because if you don't have that drive and passion to carry you through, especially in a sport that's you're going to take a few hits and hard knocks, then you aren't going to make it very far.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show and talk to me today, Lyle. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Well, if there's anything else you need or if anyone needs it, my phone number is right on the website. It's my cell phone, so they can reach me anytime. And we return calls and emails. That's one of the fun things we hear all the time. Wow, you called me back or you answered your email when other people maybe aren't doing that. And we just want to treat people the way we want to treat it and the way we still do it. And, you know, it works pretty good that way.
Yeah. Customer service goes a long way with people.
It does. Well, thanks so much for the opportunity, and I hope you have a great day and a great year.
You too, Lyle. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Lyle Sankey. For those of you who are interested in going to a school, definitely check out his website, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes. He has lots of both men and women that attend his schools. So whether you want to actually pursue a career in rodeo or just maybe give it a try for the weekend so you have the bragging rights, definitely give Lyle a shout. If you have any questions or comments for me, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me through the website at earnyourspurs.com. You can send me an email directly to alyssa@earnyourspurs.com. You can also find me on Twitter or Facebook, and any of those methods for contacting me works great. I always look forward to hearing from you. I hope you have a fabulous day, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Earn Your Spurs podcast. Until next time, happy trails and spur on.